Morning. Today's daf in Bava Kamma is Yud Zayin. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is Lanas Eichel Nishmas Libig Avila Bashmuel. Let's begin this morning in the Mishnah on Tez Zayin Amud Beis. Last Mishnah of the first parak of the Masechta. Ma Bein Tam Lamuad. The previous Mishnah told us that there are five categories of Tam, five categories of Muad. Tam is essentially an animal that does damage in a way that is unusual, it's atypical, and the animal does not necessarily get any benefit or pleasure from doing so. So it was unexpected. As a result of that, the Torah does not expect the owner of the animal to pay for full damages. The owner only pays for half the damages that are incurred. And so the Mishnah over here is going to deal with the basic fundamental difference between the payment of Tam versus the payment of Muad. So already, I gave away half the Mishnah. Half the Mishnah is based on the fact that Tam only pays half, and the Muad, who has a record, and therefore the owner should have been more responsible, more liable, so the owner is going to have to pay full damages. As we're about to learn in the Mishnah, there's going to be another fundamental difference between the payment of Tam versus the payment of Muad. Just as a reminder, when the Tam pays for half damages, so is that Mammon or is that Kanas? So that was the debate that we had in the Gemara just a couple days ago in the Daf, the Machlokas Amarayim, whether or not the Chatzi Nezik that's paid by the owner of the Tam is either Kanas, which means fundamentally he should be paying nothing, but the Torah finds him for just not being careful, or the other, the alternative explanation in the Gemara is that really you should be paying for everything, but the Torah cuts him a break because it was something that was so unusual. So, and the big nafkamin, as we discussed a couple days ago, whether or not it's mammon or whether it's a knas, is mod be knas pater. That let's say he steps forward and he admits that his animal incurred karen damages, and therefore he's liable. So if it's a kanas, he doesn't have to pay because mod be kanas pater. If it's mammon, so then he does have to pay. That's the basic discussion that we had just a couple of days ago. Let's start the Mishnah. Right in the middle of Tezayin Amud Beis, Ma Bein Tam Lamuad. What's the difference between Tam and Muad? Alosha Tam Mishalim Chatzi Nezik Megufo, Umuad Mishalim Nezik Shalim and Aliyah. So the Mishnah over here highlights the basic difference between the payment of Tam versus the payment of Muad. Payment of Tam is half damages, meaning half the amount that he damaged, and it's Megufo. Megufo meaning that it is capped. Whatever the animal is valued at, that will serve as the cap of the payment. That will be the ceiling of the payment. And he only pays the half damages up to the body of the animal. Meaning if the half damages that were incurred exceed the body of the animal, so then the owner does not have to pay anything above that. That is regarding Tam. Regarding Muad, the halach is min ha'aliyah, that you have to pay full damages, and even if it comes from the aliyah. So the simplest way to explain aliyah is meaning out of pocket. Whatever the cost is, he has to cover the cost out of pocket. The Gemara immediately, however, understands that the word aliyah must be a reference to something. So my aliyah. So the Gemara, we jump right to the Gemara. What's meant in the mission when it says the word aliyah? Rav Elazar b'me'ulo shebnechasav. It's a reference to the best of your nechasim, the best of your nechasim. Rashi says we're talking about your property. It's a reference to payment out of property. We've been discussing this since almost day one of the Masechta, where the Torah demands that when you do damages, you have to pay from Meitav Sadeh or Meitav Karmo. You got to pay the best of your field and the best of your vineyard, meaning you have to pay with property. Now, we've already spent a number of days in the Masechta since the beginning, reconciling the fact that the Torah demands that you pay with property, and also the Torah makes a demand that you also, not a demand, the Torah allows you to pay using anything that has a value, any commodity that has a value. So we already spent time trying to bridge the gap between either it's going to be property, it's going to be money. Either way, that's what our Mishnah means when it says the words aliyah. V'cheinu Omer, and the Gemara is going to cite a pasuk that describes this idea that the word aliyah is a reference to property. V'yishkav Chizkiyah olim avosav. Chizkiyah dies. Chizkiyah is Malchi Yehuda, one of the kings of Yehuda. This is after the division of the northern and the southern. So so one of the later kings was Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu was great. His father was Achaz. His father was a wicked king, a wicked man. But Chizkiyahu really brought about a renaissance, a rejuvenation of Torah amongst Klal Yisrael. The Navi describes Midan Vad Be'er Sheva, from the north all the way to the south. No one, no. there was no time period in Jewish history where the Jewish people were as fluent in Torah as under the Malchus Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu was a fantastic king. The Navi tells us that he didn't want to have children. He knew b'nevuah that his child was not going to be good. His child ended up becoming Menashe. The nevuah was correct, but nevertheless, the Navi says that he didn't want to have the child. The Navi comes over to Chizkiyahu. Navi says to Chizkiyahu, "That's not your business. You just do the mitzvos and let HaKadosh Baruch Hu figure out the rest." And so he was given a 15-year extension of life. He had a child. Anyway, this is Melchizkiyahu. During his during his malucha, so that's when Sanherib came and descended and conquered the northern kingdom, and was prepared to conquer the southern kingdom as well. But nays happened for the Jewish people, for Chizkiyahu and the Jewish people, and Sanherib was not able to conquer the south, meaning Yehuda, together with the Beit HaMikdash. So now the Navi over here is describing the death of Chizkiyahu. Vayishkav Chizkiyahu mavasav. Chizkiyahu dies. Vayikburu b'ma'ala kivrei b'nei David. And they buried him b'ma'ala. So you see the word ma'ala used over here. In this context, it's clearly talking about property. He was buried in the ground. Where? Right by b'nei David. Va'amar evalaz b'ma'ala etzom ulam shebim mishpacha. Meaning he wasn't just buried in any ground, but ancestral ground. And not just any ancestral ground, but the best of the ancestral ground. So my name is David Shlomo. So he was buried alongside David Shlomo. Vayikburu b'gvuro sevesher karalo b'yir David. Vayishkaveu b'mishka. Asher Malay Bisamim Vizanim. So the Navi goes on to describe that he was buried, and buried alongside him was Malay Bisamim. They basically put some sort of fragrance packet next to his burial. So my Bisamim Vizanim. The Gemara here is just asking for definitional explanations of these words. Well, Bisamim, we know that's fragrance. What is the word Zanim? Rav Elazar Amar Zini Zini. So Rav Elazar says that it's a reference to many varieties of fragrances. Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani Amar Bisamim Shekol Amirich Behem Bali De Zima. They were so potent, they were so strong that just a whiff of them and a man will be aroused. Kikaro Shochelakini Pachim Tamni Liraglai. The Gemara here is going to just divert, take us through a small digression. These are psukim regarding Yirmiyahu. The Navi describes. The Navi describes that Yirmiyahu, who was not a popular Navi. He told the Jewish people to do tshuva. He told the Jewish people that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed. His messages were, they were honest, but they were rough. And so he had a lot of detractors. And not only were they just basic detractors, they really wanted to do him harm. So Kikaru Shochel Akdeni, so he's crying out to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So they dug a hole in order to ensnare me. Pachim Tamnu L'Raglai. They basically set up traps for my feet. Rabbi Elazar Omer Shechashdu Mizona. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of suggestions in terms of what exactly was Yirmiyahu trying to deal with. Meaning, what did the people try to ensnare him with? So one opinion of the Gemara is that he was charged from having relations with a zona. Yirmiyahu was a Kohen. So, and a Kohen is a sur bezona. So, the accusation was that he was with a zona. Another opinion in the Gemara is that they accused him of having relations with a married woman. So the Gemara says, now the opinion that it's the accusation against Yirmiyahu is that he had relations with a zona. The Gemara says that I understand. The pasuk, the simple pshat in the pasuk, seems to support this pshat. But according to the opinion that he was suspected from Eshesish, my shocha. So the Gemara says, so the pasuk seems to indicate, again, the simple reading of the pasuk is that the accusation was that he was with a zona. So the Gemara says, atu Eshesish minafka michlal zona. So the Gemara says, okay, but if a man has relations with a married woman, so that's also a znus. Meaning, zona in the most literal definition is a reference to a prostitute. However, anytime a man has a deviant relationship, illicit closer relations, so that's called znus. So eishes ish also falls into the category of znus. Now the Gemara is going to support the pshat that the accusation was that he had relations with a married woman, because as we read on in the pesukim in Yirmiyahu, v'atashem yadatus kolatsa samalai lamaves, you know, Akash Baruch Hu, that they're in their accusations. They want me to be put to death. Now, if the accusation was eishes ish, now you understand the punishment for eishes ish is a capital punishment. So the Gemara says, so that I understand. But if the accusation was that he was not to have relations with, that he was having relations with a zona, so it's a law in the Torah, it's a negative prohibition for a kohen to have relation with zona, but it's not a capital crime. So my lamavis. So the Gemara says, so what does that mean that they wanted to put me to death? So the Gemara says, la shashichula vertit. So the Gemara says, well, they wanted to put him to death, not in the legal sense of you had relations with a woman who's forbidden to you, therefore you should be put to death, because according to one opinion, the relations was with a zona, which is only a lav, and it's not a capital crime. What he was saying to Kadosh Baruch Hu, they wanted to kill me, is that literally they tried to kill him. They put him in a pit of mud, basically some form of quicksand, some sort of mud where he couldn't get out of, and that's how they wanted to kill me. That's the pshat in the pasuk. Darish Rava, my dichsiv. So we are still dealing with the Pesukim in Yirmiyahu, and Yirmiyahu asked HaKadosh Baruch Hu for divine assistance, and any of his detractors who, as we now have learned the past couple of lines in the Gemara, not only wanted to harm him, but really wanted to, if possible, terminate his life, so he made a petition to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And his petition to Kadosh Baruch Hu went like this: Yemuch shalom lefanecha, they should stumble in front of you, meaning the detractors. Be'ez apecha asabahem, and when you're angry at Kadosh Baruch Hu, you should do to them. So, what exactly was Yirmiyahu asking a Kadosh Baruch Hu to do to his detractors? Yirmiyahu lefnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, so the Gemara darshins. Ribono shel olam, afilu b'shar she'osim tzedaka, hichshilam b'vnei adam she'inam mehuganim. So he asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, look, these people, they're not the best people, but they for sure do some mitzvos. So what I'm asking you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to do is to basically, any mitzvah that they do, I want you to make it inconsequential. Meaning basically, even in their attempts to do mitzvahs and gain some sort of zichuyos, I want you to basically take their zichuyos and make them have no value whatsoever. So, for example, when they give tzedakah, and they're going to give tzedakah to people who are einan mehuganim, who are just simply not proper, people who are not deserving of tzedakah, and so therefore the act of tzedakah that they do is going to be totally undermined. It is a strange petition. Small comment. It's a strange petition that he's asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to render their mitzvahs to be worthless. And generally speaking, is that a legitimate petition that you can ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Right. I was thinking the same Gemara. Right, Reb Bruria corrects Reb Meir. Bruria says to Reb Meir, you know, don't pray for their demise and don't pray that they should die. Just ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the riches to stop. So over here, it's okay. It's something worth noting. I mean, the Gemara obviously feels that this is the right way to understand the Pesukim, and this is the right way to understand Yirmiyahu's request. The Gemara makes no indication whatsoever that it was an inappropriate request. So obviously you have to better understand the propriety of the request. We go back to Chizkiyahu, the death of Chizkiyahu, and the honor they gave to Chizkiyahu upon his death. So they did some sort of honor in his death. So the Gemara says that one of the things they honored Chizkiyahu in his death is that they established yeshiva right by his kever. Let's take a look at the Baam Tosfos on the Amud. So first of all, why did they set up a yeshiva? So Mida Keneged Mida, says Tosfos, because Chizkiyahu spent his life, one of his life missions was to publicize and to start an entire movement, systemically teaching Torah to Klal Yisrael. So Mida Keneged Mida. So upon his death and at his kever, so they set up a yeshiva. It was a way of honoring him. Shabbat Gemidan Bad Be'er Sheva V'lo Matzu Ish V'Isha Tinok V'Tinok Yishol Yibikim B'Tumah V'Tahara. So his systematic teaching of Torah to the entire Jewish people was such that, I mean, Tosfos quoting the Gemara, was such that they knew even the more obscure halachas of Tumah Tahara, they were fluent in the halacha. Tumah Tahara, by the way, for them was not obscure, meaning they lived in Eretz Yisrael during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. So for me to call it obscure, kind of understand, but for them to call it obscure, I don't think that was appropriate, so I take it back. Anyway, Velo al kivro mamish. Just finishing up the Tosfos over here. The last Tosfos on the Amma, the last line of the Tosfos. Tosfos is bothered by a very simple question. Is that appropriate? Are you allowed to set up a yeshiva right by the cemetery? So Tosfos says, El abrichu gar ba'amos alek aloig l'rash. So Tosfos over here is sensitive to the following. We know that generally speaking, when somebody's dead, so they no longer have an opportunity to do mitzvos, and you should not flaunt mitzvos in front of their remains. This is what the Gemara describes as loeg l'rash. You're making fun of somebody who's poor. That person no longer has an opportunity to do mitzvos. You do. So, right, when you go to a basic kfaros, you should take your tzitzis and you should tuck them in. You shouldn't have them out. V'chule v'chule. So, Tosfos over here says, so they're setting up a yeshiva right by his kever, learning Torah right by his kever. Isn't that loeg l'rash? So Tosfos says, okay, so what we'll have to say is that they moved it 4 amos away from the actual kever, and so therefore, it's still an homage to Chizkiyahu HaMelech, but at the same time, not violating loeg l'rash. You could say, and other Rishonim say this, obviously Tosfos doesn't agree, but you could say that if the Torah was learned for him, so then it wouldn't be a problem whatsoever. Meaning loeg l'rash is when you're doing your own mitzvos in front of a kever, in front of a mace. But if you're doing mitzvah specifically for that person, so then it would be fine. Tosfos obviously doesn't agree with that argument, but some Rishonim do in fact make that argument. Pligi bar Rabbi Nasan v'Rabbanan. The Gemara then brings down a machlokas in terms of how long did they set up the yeshiva by the kever of Chizkiyahu. Chanamar Shlosha, some say that it was for 3 days, for Chanamar Shiva, some say it was for 7 days, the Amrila Shloshim, some say it was for a full month. Okay, so various opinions, obviously each one of these opinions are fitting into one of the halachas of Avelos. We know that the most intense Avelos is for the first 3 days, the formal Avelos is for a week, Shiva, and then there are also Nihugi Avelos that continue up until 30 days, that's what we call Shloshim. So, obviously these three opinions all fit into various categories of Shiva, and then it's just a question of why they chose that particular number. Tanu Rabbanan, we're on the very top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph. Uchvod asu lo b'moso zeh Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. And they did an honor to him, and this is Chizkiyahu. Now, as Rashi points out over here, we don't need the Gemara to tell us that this is Chizkiyahu. Meaning, if you read the Pesukim inside, from the context, it clearly is making reference to Chizkiyahu, but this is just kind of like an introductory comment. Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda, sheyatsu lefanav shlosha v'shisha elef chalutze katef, to Rav Yehuda. So according to Rav Yehuda, one of the things they did to honor Chizkiyahu at his death is that they had 36,000 people who were exposing their shoulder, meaning that one of the Nihuga Avelos, which to this day we do Kriya, but we don't do Kriya all the way to this extent where we expose the shoulder, but what they did as part of a sign of mourning and a sign of respect is that they would expose the shoulder. So for Chizkiyahu's death, they had 36,000 people do so. So Amalei Rav Nechemia Valo Lefne Achav Asu Kain. So Rav Nechemia says that's not special. In fact, for Achav, who was a wicked king, so they actually did the same thing. So Ela Sheinichu Sefer Torah Al Mitaso. So the Gemara gives a different shot. Rabbi Nechemia gives a different shot, and that is that they put a Sefer Torah right by his coffin. V'amru Ki Imzem Ashikatsu B'Zem. And they said that this, meaning Chizkiyahu, followed everything that was written in this in the Sefer Torah. Ve'ina nami avdin hachi. So the Gemara says, well, don't we do the same thing nowadays? Meaning, even this is not so impressive, as the Gemara says, nowadays as well. We take a Sefer Torah in front of, Rashi points out, not in front of anybody, but a Gavra Rabba, a very special individual, and so the... And don't we do the same thing? So the Gemara says, "Afuki mafkinan uchilom menachinan." So the Gemara gives a couple suggestions in terms of what made Chizkiyahu so special, in terms of the way they showed a sign of respect to Chizkiyahu. So one suggestion of the Gemara is that for even nowadays, we'll take out a Sefer Torah, but we won't put it on the coffin. By Chizkiyahu, not only did they take out the Sefer Torah, but they put it on his coffin as well. One suggestion. Ibai Sema, second suggestion of the Gemara. Anuchinami menachinan. So the maybe even nowadays the minhag is to put it on the coffin itself. So once again, question: what made the tribute to Chizkiyahu so unique and so special? Kiyam lo amrinan. So the Gemara says the statement, which is he observed everything which was written in here, which generally speaking, even for very very pious people. In other words, they obviously there's an attempt to follow all the mitzvahs in the Torah, but an actual accomplishment of doing so. So the Gemara says that's what they did for Chizkiyahu. They said, because they knew it was so, that everything that was written in here he followed. Amar Rabba Bar Chana, Havazina Bahaded Rav Yochanan Lamisho Shmaita. I was walking together with Rav Yochanan. We were talking and learning. Kava Ayola Beit Zekise, and Rav Yochanan had to stop. Nature called. And after he came out of the bathroom, I asked him a question. However, so, but Rav Yochanan still, right after coming out of the bathroom, so he had to wash his hands. He had to put his tefillin back on. Remember, in the good old days, they wore tefillin all day. And he had to make a bracha once again on his tefillin. And then, did he respond. And he said, "Afilu kiyam amrinan, limed lo amrinan." You could say that maybe even nowadays, we'll take out the Sefer Torah, we'll put the Sefer Torah on the coffin, we'll even say the word kiyam. But what Chizkiyahu received, which was so special and unique, is that he got the accolade of limed. He taught, meaning not only was he accomplished Talmud Chacham, he was also able to communicate it to others. V'amar mar gadol limud Torah shalimun mevi lidei maisa. So the Gemara says, okay, but the so he taught it. That's very nice. Sounds like from the statement of the Brisa, seems like a Brisa, but sounds like the statement of the Brisa that learning is very nice. But action is even better. In fact, the whole purpose of learning is so that it leads to action. So you want to tell me that Chizkiyahu was able to teach Torah to everyone else? That's great. But Lamaisa, what's better? The learning and teaching of the Torah or the action of the Torah? Certainly sounds like the action is better. And so once again, why did Chizkiyahu get such special treatment of taking out the Sefer Torah, putting it on his coffin, kim zema shekasa bazeh, and only, not only that, but also limeid. He taught that which was written in here. Doesn't sound like that should be so special. Meister should be at the top of the list. So the Gemara says, hala migmar, hala agmure. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi over here explains the difference between these expressions. Rashi says, lamigmar, la'atzma maisa adif. So, if it's a question of learning versus doing the mitzvah, obviously learning is important, but doing the mitzvah is going to be put above learning. Meaning you learning for yourself. However, Rashi continues, aval la'agmure la'achrine adav ma maisa. But to able then to transmit Torah to somebody else, that goes above Maisa. So according to Rashi, the hierarchy is, give it a gold medal, gold, silver medal, gold, silver, bronze. So bronze is learning Torah, silver is doing the mitzvos, and gold, according to Rashi, the way Rashi is understanding the Gemara, is to be able to communicate and to teach Torah to others. That's what made Chizkiyahu so special, and that not only did he learn, not only did he do, but he was able also to transmit it to others. So the Gemara says that's why he got such a special accolade. For more on this question of hierarchy and what goes above what, so you can see Tosus at the end of this, the last Tosus in the Perek, where he discusses more on this topic. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Amar Yochanan Dichstiv Ashrechem Zorei Kol Mayim Mishalchei Regel Hashur VaChamur. The Gemara quotes the pasuk. The pasuk in Yeshayahu, fortunate is the one who plants on water and meshalche regal shor v'chamor, sending out the shor v'chamor. Right, a poetic pasuk, one that sounds like it's open to drasha. The Gemara is going to darshan, and the Gemara says, "Kol ha'osek b'tar v'gemil chasadim zoch l'nachla shnei shvatim." Anyone who involves himself in both Torah and in kind acts is going to merit the portion of two tribes. The Gemara goes on to explain. Shenema ashrechem zorei veinzria el tzedaka. The word zorea, planting, is a reference to tzedaka. And so that is a reference to the Gemilas Chasadim. That's the kind of action. Emer Zorei Lachem Letzdaka V'Kitzru Lefi Chasad V'Ein Mayim Al Torah. And when it says water is a reference to Torah. Shenemer Hoy Kotzame Lechu Lamayim. So that is how we know that the beginning of this pasuk in Yeshayahu is a reference to both Maisim Tovim and Torah. What does a person merit after being involved in both? Zoche l'nachla shnei shvatim. He merits two shvatim. Which two? Zoche l'kila ki Yosef. So he gets the chain, the favor of Yosef. People will like him. And, I'm sorry, dichsiv ben paras Yosef beno sa'ada alei shor. Right, Rashi over there in Chumash gives the imagery of Yosef being so favorable. People liked him so much that basically women scaled the wall in order to get a better look at Yosef. So he had chayin. And also they get the portion of Yisachar. Yisachar was able to bear the burden. So Isamri Oivav Nofel Nofanav Ki Yosef. And the Gemara has another drush in terms of how to understand the pasuk in Yeshayahu. Your enemies are going to fall in front of you like Yosef. Dechsiv Bahem Amim Yinagach Yachdav Afse Aretz. So you're going to have the kind of respect, intimidation, where your enemies are just going to fall in front of you. Additionally, v'zoch labina ki Yisachar, you're going to have the kind of penetrating insight that Yisachar had. Dechsivum ne Yisachar, yodei bina li'itim ladas ma ya'aseh Yisrael. So that is another way to understand what if you are involved in Gemilas Chasadim and in Tzedaka, sorry, and in Torah. So what do you merit? So you merit the zechus of two shvatim. The Gemara offers two explanations of what these two shvatim are. Hadron alach arba avos. That is the end of the first parak of the Masechta. Let's begin. We start now the second parak of Baba Kama. Second parak of Baba Kama is really hamshach. It's really a continuation of the first parak. Ketzad haregel mu'adas. How is the regel mu'ad? Meaning, from the beginning of the Masechta, we talked about the three fundamental avos that we talk about regarding an animal. The three are Karen, Shein, Regal. Karen, the damage done by the horn of the animal, which is unusual. The animal doesn't benefit from it, and those damages that are done, so if the animal is a tam, chatzi nezik, if the animal is a muad, nezik shalem, and you pay these damages regardless of where the damages occur. That's Karen. Shein is the type of damage where the animal is eating something, enjoying that which is eating, expected that the animal is going to eat. This is normal behavior for the animal. So if the animal eats, the owner of the animal has to pay nezek shalem, full damages. As we've been discussing since the beginning of the Masechta, the payment of Shein is only going to be incurred if the damages take place, birushus anizak, only in the property of the nizak. And regel, also, the animal is walking, animal steps on things while it's walking, that's normal, animals walk, animals step on things, and so therefore, the owner of the animal is going to have to pay full damages, nezek shalem, since this is a usual type of damages, and so therefore, owner pays nezek shalem. The animal is muad, is already assumed to do this kind of damage. Once again, the payment is only going to be incurred, the damages are only going to be incurred if it takes place b'stei acher, only in someone else's property, meaning in the property of the nizak. Both Shein and Regel in Rishus Rabim is going to be pater. Okay, those are the basics. And so now the Mishnah is just simply articulating cases in which you would be chayav for Shein and for Regel. So we start with Regel. Ketzad haregel mu'adas l'shaber b'derech hilucha. So how does an animal have a predisposition towards stepping on things? It breaks things. That's its walking. It's a simple question, simple answer. The Mishnah continues. Habehema mu'adas l'halech kedarka u'l'shaber. An animal walks and it breaks things while it's walking. What did we gain from that second line of the Mishnah? We're going to discuss that. We're going to discuss that a little bit more in just a moment. Haisa mevaetes. Let's say the animal's kicking. Now, kicking, as we discussed already, is an unusual activity done by the animal. Animal doesn't kick and break things. It could, but it's not something which is which was expected by the owner. And so therefore, even though it's done with the feet, but because it was unexpected, so it doesn't fall under the category of regel, falls under the category of karen. And so therefore, haisam eva'etas, osha yitzroros menatzin mitachas raglaha, or let's say the animal steps on a stone, and because of the force pushed down on the stone, so it basically creates a propulsion where the stone now is, based on the force, flung in a direction. And as the stone now is pushed down, flung into a direction, almost like a bullet, so it breaks somebody else's kli. So this is what's called tsroros. And the Mishnah is about to teach us that under these circumstances, the owner of the animal has to pay damages, chatzi nezek, half damages. V'shivra asakelim mishalim chatzi nezek. So both in the case where the animal kicks something and breaks it, or the propulsion of the stone under the weight of the animal breaks the kli, in both of these cases, the owner of the animal has to pay chatzi nezek. Darsa ala kli v'shavra so v'nafal akli v'shavro. So let's say the animal falls down on a kli, steps down on a kli and breaks it, and then while breaking the first kli, shards of the first kli break off and land into more than land, and are propelled into another item and break the second kli, vishavro, and breaks that second kli, alarisha mishal nezek shalem. The first kli that the animal broke, the owner of the animal has to pay nezek shalem. That's called regel. On the second kli that was broken, because it only comes out through propulsion, it doesn't, it's a koach, it's not damaged by the body of the animal itself, that falls under the category of tsroros, chatzi nezek.
Does that continue on multiple?
Presumably, meaning kocho de
domino.
You're right, you're asking about kocho de kocho. It's a good question. I think it goes on. I think it's coming up in the Gemara, that discussion. Okay.
The first kishuv is a regel,
right? Right, when stepping on something is regel. It can only it's going to work in Rishus
Anizak.
Presumably, if it's discussed in the Gemara and I don't remember it, could be. So we'll see. On the first kli that was broken directly by the foot of the animal, so that's regel, and the owner has to pay full damages on the propulsion and the subsequent breaking of the second vessel from the first vessel. So that's tsroros, and therefore chatzi nezek. And this halacha that the owner of the animals has to pay for damages where the animal steps on somebody else's kli is not just true regarding animals, chickens as well. You own birds, obviously they don't have as much weight, obviously they're not going to generate as much force, but it doesn't matter. The owner of the chickens are going to be responsible for the damages in a similar fashion. And the Mishnah just simply articulates the scenario. Chickens are expected to walk. Ulishaber, and they're going to break. Hayadalo kashur baraglav. Let's say there was some sort of weight attached to the bottom of the foot of the chicken. Oshaya mahades mashabes akelim. Or it was dancing and through it breaks a kli. So mishalem chatzi nezek, the owner of the chicken only needs to pay half damages. So just give me a moment. So the as far as the weight is concerned, meaning that it was not the leg of the chicken that actually broke the kli, it was the weight which was attached to the leg that broke the kli. So once again, that's not gufo, that's not the chicken damaging with its body itself, it's only with the force of the chicken. So that falls under the category of tsuros, and you pay half damages. And the same thing with the dancing, meaning that the chicken did not dance and land directly on the kli, but basically caused a propulsion of some small stone, and that stone went into someone else's kli. Once again, throw us. Yeah, Ben.
Is it
chatzi nezek because it's throw us, meaning it's not. Right. It's not the chicken didn't do it with his body, did it with something, with the force that was generated. Amalei Ravina LeRava, that we are on the topic of Yitzayinim and Beis, a discussion amongst the Amoraim. Heino Regal, Heino Behema. So a little bit unclear in terms of what the Mishnah is doing. If you take a look back at the Mishnah is providing two lines which seemingly are redundant. Look back at the Mishnah and the first two lines of the Mishnah. Opening line of the Mishnah is Ketzer Ragel Mu'adel Sashabe Bederech Hilucha. How does the category of Ragel work? It works like this. The animal walks, animal steps on something, liability. And then the next line of the Mishnah, HaBehema Mu'adel La'alech Kedarko L'Shaber. Animal walks, it breaks. Those first two lines of the Mishnah seem to be perfectly redundant. And so that's what bothers the Gemara. So Amalei, Haina Regel, Haina Behema. The first line and the second line are making essentially the same point, aren't they? And we know, we've been trained since every line of the Mishnah is meant to teach us something new. So Amalei, Tana, Avos, Biktani, Talados. So the Gemara says the first line of the Mishnah is talking about the Av, the main category. The second line of the Mishnah is talking about Tolad, it's talking about a subcategory. So meaning, the Rashi over here explains, that the first line of the Mishnah is talking about the actual foot itself. Meaning the animal is going to be damaging with the actual foot itself. As far as the next line of the Mishnah, the animal is damaging not with its foot, but with its body. Meaning as it's walking, incidentally, the animal now, its body is pushing up against an item, that's considered regal. Meaning even though it's not the foot per se, but basically any damage that's caused in the normal walking of an animal falls under the category of regal. So if it's the foot itself, that's the av nezek. Anything with the body of the animal, toladas hanezek, as we learned on day one of the Masechta. Most of the time in nezek, there's not going to be a difference between being an av and a tolada. It's just simply a way of categorizing the various forms of nezek. But in terms of payment and increment of payment, they're going to be the same halacha. But that's what we're doing in the first and second line of the Mishnah. First line is an av, second line is a tolada. Elamiata sevetiktani Hashem muadas abehema muadas my avos and my tolados ika. So the Gemara says, well, I loved it. Loved the pshat in the first two lines of the Mishnah. But then the Mishnah is moving on to Shein. And when the Mishnah moves on to Shein, so how exactly did you understand the first and the second line when it comes to Shein? So the Gemara says, my avos my tolad zika. So have a delay bedichusa. So Rava says back to Ravina, look. He kind of is. He answers back in a joking way, in a witty way, and he says, "Amalei ana shenichada v'at shenichada." Look, I already answered up our Mishnah, so I did a good job. You have another Mishnah that you want to ask against me? Look, I answered one. You answer one. I'm going to take a break. And the Gemara says bedichusa, meaning it was a smart comment. It was a witty comment. In other words. It's okay to be a little bit witty from time to time. The time am I? So, but the Gemara says, okay. Now, with Rava's wit put aside, can we get an answer to the question? What do you do in terms of the next Mishnah? So, I'm Rav. Ashi Tani Shein Dechayev Tani Shein DeBehema. So the Gemara says that when it comes to Shein and the two references of Shein, one's the reference to a Chaya, a non-domesticated animal, and the other one is a Behema, domesticated animal. Meaning, as we've discussed just yesterday, as long as a person owns the animal, a person's going to be liable for the damages, and it doesn't matter whether it's Shein Behema or Shein Chaya. Sakadat Chamina Veshilach Es Biaro Ksiv Behema In Chaya Lo. I might have thought that the damages and the obligation to pay for the damages is only specific to a behema. The psukim and mishpatim seem to be describing a behema, and so I might have thought, it's a funny havamina, but I might have thought that if you owned a chaya and the chaya did damages, there is no obligation to pay. So it's coming to teach us that Chaya is included in Behema, meaning that even though Chaya, we know categorically there are differences between Chaya and Behema, but in general, when we are categorizing animals, Chaya and Behema fit under the same category. How do we know that? So if you take a look at Rashi over here, the Gemara doesn't say how we know that. So you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi says, Dichsiv Zosa Behema Asher Tochlu. So quotes from Psukim and Parshas Re'eh, the Torah describes the animals that we're allowed to eat, and then the Torah lists, and the Torah uses the word Behema. And then the Torah goes on to list Ayal, Tzvi, Yachmor. The Torah then describes non-domesticated animals. So you see that even though the heading of the Parsha is Behema, the examples that are given are including even non-domesticated animals. By the way, not to be confused, there's Ayal and Ayal. This pasuk that Rashi is quoting in Parshas Re'eh is an Ayal. It's kind of like a deer. It's a non-domesticated animal. Anyway, if you take a look further, Tosos over here doesn't love Rashi's source, because even according to Rashi, this only limits us to animals, meaning four-legged creatures, both the domesticated and the non-domesticated. As we have already learned back in the Mishnah, the obligation to pay is even for birds as well. So how do I know that birds are included? That's why Tosos doesn't like Rashi's pshat. Tosos gives another pshat. See Tosos for more discussion on this topic. E hachi, back to the Gemara. If this is so, hami bailele misna bereisha. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so shouldn't this have been taught earlier? Of the two, which one is not written? The one that's not written is Chaya. Behema is written, but Chaya is not written. So the Gemara says, Hai da'as yulei midrasha chaviv alei. So the Gemara says, yeah, but, and we've seen this a couple of times throughout Shas, that when you have a halacha that's generated through drush and not explicitly mentioned the Torah, look, we know there are two parts of the Torah, the Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebapeh. We love the Torah Shebapeh, meaning that is our Mesorah. Torah Shebichsav, so everyone seems to have a copy. So, right, it's popular. But in terms of what makes the Torah to us, it's the Torah Shebapeh. So when we have a drasha, which is not explicitly mentioned in the Torah, but we know through Torah Shebapeh, so it's chavivim, so it's we love it. And so that's why you'll find in the Mishnah will offer a halacha that's first derived through Torah Shebapeh, and then give us a halacha of Torah Shebichsav. So yihachi resha nami, lifnai delok siva bereisha. So the Gemara says, okay, so then go back to our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we're talking about regel. What's the first example of regel? Where the animal steps on something. And then the other examples are the tolados. The tolados are not mentioned in the Torah. Well, if your argument, if your logic is correct, that first we should be giving the Torah Shebapeh, then we should be giving Torah Shebichsav, so the tolados should be offered first, because that's Torah Shebapeh, and the av, the animal stepping on an item, that's Torah Shebichsav. So that should be done second. And that's not the way it was presented back in the Mishnah.
But you don't present it 12 before an av.
So hachi ashta, the Gemara's basically answer is hasmi divi di avos ninu hach gasulei midrasha chaviv alei hach shavikav vi utani tolada. So good. So the Gemara gives Ben exactly her answer. Look, when we're talking about Shane and we're talking about the animal that eats, so chaya comes before behema because they're both avos, they're both main categories. It's just a question that chaya we only know through Torah Shebapeh. That's why it's going to be listed first. Behema, we know through Torah Shebichsav. We'll put that second. But in our Mishnah, we're talking about an av and a tolada. You're not going to put a tolada before the av. First, teach the main category, regel, and then incidental contact with the body of the animal, tolada. That's going to be the proper order. Ebi semi ed. I'm sorry. I read the salik mi regel, pasach mi regel. So the I'm sorry, I was right the first time. I did the salak miregel, pasach miregel. Since we opened up with regel, so meaning the last thing we left off in the previous parak was regel, so therefore we're opening up with regel. But enachinami, meaning it could, in the second answer, sounds like what the Gemara is suggesting is, yeah, maybe we would have even done the same thing with an av and a tolada. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. Behema mu'edas la'ala chidarka l'shaber. Animal walks and breaks, and the owner of the animal will be liable for the damages that are incurred. Ketzad, behemah shenichnas al hachatzar anizak, an animal goes into the property of the damage party, or it's going to be in just a moment, the damage party, v'zika begufa, derech ilucha, and damages with the body of the animal as it's walking. So uvisara, or derech ilucha, or with the hair of the animal, meaning as long as the damage is caused directly by the body of the animal, or the hair of the animal, in other words, you might have thought that the hair is considered a separate entity from the animal itself. That's not correct. The hair is also considered part of the body of the animal. But okif sha'alaha, saddle. As long as the saddle is tied up to the animal, the saddle is considered part of the body of the animal. Damages that are incurred by the saddle are considered regal. And a subcategory, tolad of regal. Uvishlif sha'alaha, or any burden that's being carried by the animal, that is also considered part of the body of the animal. And the owner of that animal is going to have to pay full damages. Over primbia shebepia, or a bit that's in the animal's mouth. Over zuk shebetzavareha, or a bell around the neck of the animal. V'chamor b'maso, a donkey with what it's carrying. In all these circumstances, any damages that are incurred are going to be have full liability on the part of the owner of the animal based on the fact that these are all tolados of rego. Mishalim nezik shalim, so he pays nezik shalim. Simchas omer tsoros v'chazir shayagov v'bashba v'izik mishalim nezik shalim. Now, Simchas of the opinion that if I have tsoros, stones that are propelled based on the force of the animal, and then those stones shoot off and break kalim, so Simchas says you have to pay. And not only do you have to pay full damages. Now, there are two things which should bother us immediately. Number one, why does Simchas bring even introducing this topic right now? That's not what the Tanakhama was talking about. Tanakhama was talking about direct damages from the body of the animal. So why is Simchas even bringing it up? Number two, we learned together in our Mishnah that Tzoros, you pay not full damages, you pay chatzi nezek, you pay half damages. So immediately those two things should bother us. It's going to. The Gemara is going to raise both of these issues in just a moment. And Chazir Shaya Gover. Nover ba'ashpa. Let's say you have a pig, and the pig is basically furrowing his way through the garbage, and while doing so breaks an item. So v'hizik mishalim nezik shalim. So you pay for full damages. Now, hizik pshita. Ela'ema hitiz v'hizik mishalim nezik shalim. Now, if the pig, while furrowing, directly damages with its body, so the Gemara says, that's obvious. That's a subcategory of rego. So what must be meant is that while the pig is going back and forth in the garbage, so then propels a stone to then hit another kli, so that once again this falls into the category of tsoros, and Simchas is of the opinion that the owner of the pig has got to pay full damages. Tsoros man dekar shemayhu. So here the Gemara asks the question which I alluded to. Why are we even talking about tsoros? Why did it even come up in the Braisa? Chesuri mechzer avahachi ketani. The Gemara says that we are missing portions of the Braisa, and we have to insert the following into the Braisa so that we have a good understanding of what's going on. Tsoros kerchayu chati nezek. So now we have to include the following. After the Braisa giving us the basic examples of any direct bodily contact between the body of the animal and the damage that's incurred, so that's regel, and that's full damages. Again, assuming it's bechatzar hanizak. Then, propulsion. If the animal steps on an item and that item now shoots out from under the foot of the animal and breaks a kli, this is what's called tsoros. And the Tanakhama, now this was not in the Braisa. This is what we inserted into the Braisa. Tanakhama is of the opinion. This is what's called tsoros. And therefore the owner pays chatzi nezek. Simchas omer tsoros v'chazir shayinover b'ashpa v'itiz v'hizik mishalim nezek shalim. And on this, Simchas says, no, you do not pay half damages, you pay full damages. In other words, Simchas disagrees. Tana Rabbanim, we learned on a Braisa. Tana Golem Shayu, Mafrichim, Imakum, Imakum, birds that are flying. Vishavukel Mechnafeim, Mashalim, Nezik Shalim. And with the actual wings themselves, they damage a kli, pay full damages. Beruch Shebekanfeim, Mashalim, Chatzin Nezik. However, if the damages are only incurred based on the wind that is generated from the wings, so that's Koach, that's the force of the bird, and so therefore the owner of the bird pays not full damages, but only half. Simchas Omer nezek shalem. Samchus l'shita so says that you have to pay full damages. Tanya Dev, we learned another brisa. Tanya Golem Shayim Mahadis in Agabe Isa. Let's say you have birds jumping up and down on a dough. The Agabe Paris aren't fruit. The Tinfu, oh, Nikvu. And they either dirty the dough and fruit, or they actually peck at it. Mishalem, Nezik Shalem. That's done with that direct body of the bird. Therefore, owner of the bird has to pay full damages. He'elu Alfar Oats, Reros, Mishalem, Chatsi Nezik. However, if let's say the damage comes about only because, based on the jumping, stones and dirt get kicked up and hit the dough or hit the fruit, so that is koach, and you pay half damages. Simcha Zomer Nezek Shalem, and Simcha says full damages. Let's do one more. Tanya Idach, another brisa. Tanya Goshayu Mafriach Mimakom Lamakom. Birds were jumping around from one place to another. V'yatzar Ruach Mitachas Kanafav, and generate a force of wind underneath their wings. V'shibra Zekelem Mishalem Chatzin Ezek. So according to the Tanya Kama, you pay Chatzin Ezek, and that is the end of the brisa. And the Gemara's comment, very straightforward, Stamma Kerabanan. It's a stam brisa following the opinion of the Chachamim. Amar Rav Bishlam Simchos Kasev Kochol Kegufo Dami. So Rav says, let's think about this. I understand Simchos' viewpoint, because force generated by a person has the same halachic status as the person himself. In fact, later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about how you shoot an arrow, or in our modern day scenario, you shoot a gun. So you don't say, well, I didn't do it with my physical body, I only caused a force to be propelled. So we know the halacha is you're liable. You're liable for damages. You're liable for death. In other words, you're liable. So Simchus's position is same thing is true regarding an animal, meaning either the animal damages with its body itself, or it damages with force generated by the animal. There's no difference. Kocho kagufo. So Simchus's position, Rava says, I get it. Ella, Rav.
Simchus, there's never a tzorot.
There is tzoros, it's just you pay nezek shalem.
No, but he's saying that this is not tzoros.
No, he's saying it is tzoros. He disagrees with the conclusion.
If it's halacha and not shemitah, how could he say?
The Ramban asked your question. So So Ella Rabbanan I kegufo dami kole nezek by l'shalem. V'ilav kegufo dami chatzi nezek nami l'shalem. But according to the Chachamim, I don't understand the rationale. If they think koach is like guf, so then they should agree with Simchus, full damages. If they feel that koach is not like guf, so then zero damages, right? It is that happy medium which is never happy. Meaning the fundamental position is always the easier position to argue, always. So either full or zero. What is this half damages? So the Hadar Amarava, La'olam Igufo Dami, La'olam Kigufo Dami. So the Gemara says that really they agree that fundamentally Koach is Guf. The force generated by you has the same legal status as you yourself. And the fact that you pay chatzi nezek, that's halach l'moshe misinai, and that's why you pay half damages, because for reasons that are going to be very hard for me to articulate, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted that the owner pay not full damages, half damages, even though fundamentally the Chachamim agree with Simchus that Koach is considered like the guf itself. But this is... Simchus argues. So this is right. So this is what Ben made reference to, and this is I'd say it's well known. I don't know if it's well known. I'll say I know it, and now I'll communicate to you. So the Rambam says that there is no machlokas by halach l'moshe m'sinai. The Rambam categorizes five parts to Torah Shabbat Peh. So the third category of the Rambam's Torah Shabbat Peh is halach l'moshe m'sinai. The Rambam says what's unique about halach l'moshe m'sinai is that it is... Okay. There are five categories of Torah Shabbat Peh according to the Rambam. Second category of Torah Shabbat Peh is Halacha Moshe Misinai. The Rambam says what is noteworthy about Halacha Moshe Misinai, it's not subject to Machlokas. That's what the Rambam says. So the Ramban says, I learned the Gemara Baba Kama, Daf Yud Zayin. I know Tzroros, the Gemara describes as Halacha Moshe Misinai. I know that the Gemara brings down a Machlokas Tanayim, whether or not you pay full or half damages. So the Ramban says, I have a hard time understanding the Rambam Shita. Okay, so on a separate occasion, so you'll need to hear a shiur about defense of the Rambam against the Ramban's attack. In the meantime, however, let's just quickly recap. So we finished the first parak this morning. First parak ended with Divrei Agarata, death of Chizkiyahu, the honor that was bestowed to Chizkiyahu, and just a couple of Divrei Chizuk and Agarata regarding the how to rank learning Torah, doing mitzvos, teaching Torah to others, and according to Rashi, that is actually the bronze, silver, and gold. We started the second parak. We talked about regal, toladus of regal. We spoke about sreros, and we finished by learning that the halacha of sreros, that really koach is considered guf, and simchas and the chachamim agree, and then what they disagree about is whether the owner pays full or half damages. Obviously, we follow the chachamim, owner pays half damages.